first thing I want to know is, I'm going to ask you, and you're going to tell me what your name is and where you live. So what's your name?
My name is Helen Crum, and I live in Hague, North Dakota.
Now, Helen, where were you born?
Strasbourg, South Russia.
Okay. When you answer me, I need to answer like in the form of a statement. So when I ask you where you were born, I need you to say, I was born in.
Oh, okay.
So as we go through with the questions, you can start with a statement. That
okay.
Would be great.
Okay.
So where were you born?
I was born in Strasbourg, South Russia.
Now, how long did you live in Strasbourg?
I was born in 1920 and left Strasbourg 1944.
Now, a lot of people that we talk to have relatives that were born in the 1800s and early 1900s in Strasbourg, South Russia, but really don't know what the village looked like. Why don't you tell us what the village was like, your memories of growing up?
Well, the village was way along, a long way, you know, you go. And then there was always adding on, you know, as the village grew, there was always people added on, built houses to the next, you know. And it was, I think there was the main street, the second street, and then they called the skessel. That means short, real short, couple of houses, not too many. Uh-huh.
Okay, when I visited Strasbourg, there was a very famous market there. Was that market there?
Yes, yeah. Every Wednesday, people came and they bought horses and cows and wagon and fish and chicken and pigs and everything.
Do you remember going to the market as a child?
Oh, yeah. When the market was cleaned up, and we always looked for some pennies, so we went up and looked for some pennies. Some people may throw pennies around or forgot a couple of them, so that's what we did, yeah.
I'm hearing something in the background.
Clock or something.
Do we have a clock?
Oh.
I think it's on the oven. Are you cooking something?
No.
Okay, we're still rolling, so we've got all that stuff with you. So, Helen, we're talking about your life in the village. Why don't you tell us what it was like growing up in the village as a girl?
Well, we start school when we were 7 years old. And then you had to go to the eighth grade. First we had German, and then later on it was cut out, and then it was just Russia. But there was no religion taught in that school. And if you wanted to go to higher education, then you had to go to Odessa, and you had to pay for yourself. Unless you want to be a party member or a doctor or a teacher, then the government paid for you. But otherwise, you had to pay yourself.
Did you learn religion, though? Did your parents teach you religion?
Oh, yes. See, we had it in church before church start or before church let out. So we had catechism.
So you were able to go to church as a child?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So how old were you when you couldn't go to church any longer?
You mean when communists took over? Well, it started in the 30s already. In the 30s when those starvation was, well, there was wheat and there was vegetable and there was everything growing, but we couldn't have it. They came and took everything away. So if you wanted to don't starve, you had to go to the kolkhoz, collective, you know what they said. And then you got your 3 meals, and when the year was out, you know, you got so much a day, maybe 1,000 rubles, not even that much. So you had to live with that. But we could have a cow and a couple of pigs, a couple of chicken, and then a little wine garden. You know what we had? Vegetable. It's maybe 50 acres. That's what they let us have, you know. And then when in the 30s, you know, when communists took over, that's what they took all the people away. See, first they took the teachers away. Then they took the people who was a little smart and helped other people. Then they took the priest away. My father died in May the 5th, and he was the last person who got buried in Strasbourg. Then they took Father Kopp, Theophil Kopp, away. He was from Krasna. And from that time on, they start demolish the church, throw the bells down, then the steeple down, and everything, the statue, the big organ, everything was hauled out and burned, and they made a show hall out of the church. And our church, I think 600 people it held it with the pews who were in. And then when the Germans came, took over then in 42, they brought their own chaplain with them. Then they cleaned the church up, painted all new, brought some bells, hang the bells up, the church and everything. And then those chaplains married people for 3 days. They baptized people for 3 days. They heard confession for 3 days. Because in 35, we had no church till the Germans came in. We were out of priest. People prayed at home. They buried at home. They baptized it. They married at home. And so we made our own. But we had no contact with the outside world. There was only one radio station. What they told us, that's all. No newspaper, no nothing.
For how long did you not have contact?
7 years. Yeah. From 35, when my father died, till the Germans come in 42. But see, it was hard for the people. We have no contact what goes on in Baden or the Fels or Kandel. And a lot of people had relatives in Germany and in America, and they got packages, and they got all put away. Every night they came, well, Joe, take your cap and you go with us. Well, where do we go? Well, we'll find out. That's the end of it. There was every, I think, in a hundred in the 90s, they took away a loan from Strasbourg. Every night, that's the way they cleaned up, you know. So they said, well, if you want to live and don't starve, you go to Kolkhoz, you know, comes Molsi, what they call that. It's a, well, I don't know how to say it in German. They were all communist parties, you know, whatever they were. But then when the Germans came in, you know, so they helped us again. But it didn't take long. It only took 2 years. And then they, you know, the Russia lost the war between, you know, the German had to leave again. But they said, you were out on your own. There's nobody can help you. And then one day they came into the house and knocked on the door, and they said, well, pick March 23rd, 1942, that's when you, 44, that's when we're going to leave. It was raining and snowing and everything. And 2 or 3 family went together and put up little stuff where they had a little Rauchfleisch, you know, smoked meat and bread and a couple of clothes. What we didn't have too much clothes, all on one wagon, and that's the way we start to driving. And we supposed to go way up to Franzfeld, and that's where the the Dnieper, the river went through, you know, and from there we're supposed to go with the ferry over to Romania, see, and it starts snowing and everything, and the Russian came, and they threw bombs and bombs and bombs, you know, and a lot of people didn't make it over. But my mom was such a feisty lady. She said, we're going to make it. We're going to make it. We stay a little bit behind, and then maybe the snow is going to quit, and then, and that's, she was right. So we made it, but we couldn't take nothing, just what we had on our shoulder.
How many people left the village?
Well, there was 1,200 of us, you know, and you could not believe it when you seen that the cats, the dogs, everything stood, and just when they cried, you know, where you go, where you leave, the church bell was ringing, and the Russian people from across the river came over. Why do you leave? We were such good friends. Why do you leave? They couldn't believe. And we said, you can go kick our house now, but there's nothing, you know. And most of our Strasbourg stuff, like the church stuff, the monstrance and everything, that went all down with the ferry because the Russian bombed it. So, and then from there we went over to Romania. Ackerman was the first we came there. Well, the people didn't let us go in the yard, not even taking water. What will you want with us? Well, we don't have nothing, you know. So we had to go. We had to go. And the horses, they had no more hoofs on their feet, you know. And mud up to your knee. We had nothing, hardly anything to eat except dry bread and stuff. So some of my sisters and other people, they went in town and they traded off some of their rings and stuff for a loaf of bread and a bale of straw for the horses. So from there we went up to Budapest, Hungary, and then another 3 weeks, and then they finally set the Germans, because the horses, they just lay down on the street and died, and every morning 3-4 people had to be buried on the road. And then the Germans came and said, you're out on your own, but there is a big truck, train's going to come, and in 5 days, you're going to be in Poland then. Well, we had nothing, you know. And maybe I shouldn't say that, but the lice crawling up on our shoulders and stuff, we couldn't wash ourselves, taking care of ourselves. Then that big train came, so they loaded us all in. I don't know how many we are. Some people went back. They not even wanted to go along anymore. They said, we're just going to die. So in 5 days, we came to Poland, and they unloaded us at Poland, and they put us in a, it's almost like a concentration camp, you know. They loused us, and they disinfect us, and then they put us in a, it's a big, it's just like you put a fence and put cattle in. So we got 3 meals and stuff, and then we had to go and work in the factory for the Germans, making, see, Germany occupied Poland that time through the war. So we had to sew clothes and different stuff. But in the night we had to go back to the camp and stay there, you know, and stuff like that. So we were in Poland for, well, we were 2 months and 6 days on the road, walked. I said, no wonder my knee given out. And then January the 20th, then the Germans came. They said, we have to go. The Russia is only 20 kilometers behind. We had no more horses. We had no more wagon. We had nothing. Me and my mother and the 2 sisters, they were working someplace else. How are we going to get together? Well, the people went out and started to walk and walk. And we were 16 days on the way until we made it to Germany. And when you make like that, the snow, like ice came down, you know. But nobody could help you. And we could hear the Russian bombs, you know, and shooting and everything. Then we lost one of my sisters. She got mixed up with other people. And then finally, after 3 days, we found her again. Well, we came to Germany, and all the people did. It was just, you cannot imagine. People and people and people, and nobody know where we go, what we do, or who's going to help us. And Germany was down in the ruin too, because they bombed every night, you know, the American came and, you know, demolished all what was left of Germany.
What year was this?
In 42, yeah. And then my mother had a sister, and she was married to a German gefangen, how you call, from World War One.
Prisoner of War?
Prisoner of War, yeah. And she said, you know, we should go, maybe we find Tante Josepha, and maybe she can take us in. And we were all set in the train, ready to go. Then the flieger came, and they drew bomb. And then that car where we were in didn't get hurt. So the back and the front was gone. So my mom said, we cannot go now and look for Tante Josepha. And it was about 10 kilometers where there was a big a farm, orchard, you know what you call. And then farmers came out and they said, you need help or you want something. Or, yeah, well, we were hungry, we have no place to go and stuff like that. Well, we could use some people to work and for us. So they took us in, my mother and my two sisters. And I was 7 months pregnant with my first child. My husband was killed already, and my brother was killed already in Budapest. So they took us in, and we worked for those farmers, you know, for just cheap, you know. Well, they had nothing either, you know, but they, you know. And then I worked for them for 6 years. And then, you know, the Germans sent us, the Americans sent us packages into care packages. And here in Hague, there was Father Niebler, Joseph Niebler. And in Dickinson was Monsignor Oberle. I suppose you know, heard of him. They organized those care packages every month. This man who let me come, I come later on to that. Every month he sent a package over, $25 worth, and a lot of people. And we got one of those packages, and there was his address in, and it was Joseph Crum and Catherine Crum from Hague, North Dakota. And they kept on sending us soap and Crisco and needles and combs and whatever, you know, we needed. And I went to work for those people. And then, see, Joseph and Catherine had no children. They adopted three, and they were all married already. And then he asked once, he wrote a letter, and he said, how about coming to America, you know? And my mom said right away, that would be good. She said, you could have make a life for yourself. And Marie, my little girl, was 6 years old. And here in Deutschland, there is nothing, you know, you always be made and stuff like that. And we kept on talking and talking back and forth and right. Then I finally thought, well, maybe I should go. And then I said to my ma, would you get?
I'm gonna sneeze. Okay, I'm fine.
And then I said, wouldn't you get homesick if I go away? Well, I'm just glad when you got to have a home for Marie and for yourself. And then, I don't know. And then people said, yeah, you want to go so far away. And I said, I don't know, Mom. Maybe I shouldn't go. She said, you go. She was a feisty one. She got us through all that stuff. And then, this one lady I worked for, she was such a good lady, you know. She said, yeah, Helena, you want to go out to the Americana? She said, did they catch people and they selling people and stuff like that, you know. That was the story from the Indians, you know, that's what they knew in Germany that time, see. And then, well, my mom said, make up your mind. So I wrote, I'll come. And then he said, Monsignor Obley, they're going to pay just from New York up to here. And the rest of his, the Catholic Caritas paid for everything, you know. So it took a year till I got all my, the papers and the shots and everything. Now, in October the 10th, I had to leave Hermithausen, where I used to work. And everybody was crying. I said, oh, don't worry, Columbus took a chance too. Why shouldn't I? So I went. And then we stayed in Bremerhaven till October the 23rd. And then we got loaded in a big America remodeled a warship for the displaced people, bring people over here, see. And we went in that boat, so we were 9 days. And in November the 2nd, we came on in New York in the evening.
What year was that?
45.
Did you say November 2nd, 1945?
1945, yeah. And then they said, we have to stay overnight in the ship till the next morning. Then we see the Statue of Liberty and everything. But when we looked up, we were just lost. We not even know how to say hello. I not even had a nickel in my pocket. And we were unloaded and then checked all out, whatever it is. Well, and then they put some tags on, well, you know, go to North Dakota, you go to South Dakota, you go there. And this one lady said, oh, you God, you go to North Dakota? I said, yeah. Oh, my God. And that's all what she said. So I wonder what is that, the end of the world or not. And then the closer, then they unloaded us. We came to, now first I have to tell you that they took us to a restaurant and gave us a big, big breakfast, hash browns and everything, and water glasses that big. And we thought, should we just drink the water and that coffee or whatever it was? Well, in Deutschland, you don't drink the water because it has that alkali in, so they drink all distilled water. So, well, we finally found out we could drink the water. And while they unloaded us, then I went to Chicago, from Chicago to New York, from New York to Chicago, and then back to Minneapolis, and then back to Fargo, and then back to Bismarck with the train. And then Monsignor Obley and Father Nipple and Joe, that man who let me come, they were on the train, station, and waited for us. And then they said, the conductor said, no, Father Nipple said, is there Anna Helena Feist here? Yeah, here she is. So we walked out, you know, and then they brought me home. But when we got out of Bismarck, I couldn't see nothing. It was all but snow and snow. And I said, oh, that's why that lady said, oh, my God. And so I went here. Marie started going to school, and I worked for those people. And then Joe said, you don't have to stay if you don't want, if you want to find a job or what. Well, I said, no, that's good enough. What if I have a roof over my head and a meal? And then he was a little choking. And then next morning he had a big bowl of cereal and a big spoon. And I said, why? he said, I thought you love cereal so much. Here you put a big spoon in. But then after 3 years, and then his wife died. And he had a sister who is a nun in Yankton, South Dakota, and she came up quite a bit, and she said, you know, Joe, you should get married to Helena. And he said, no, I'm 30 years older than she is, and what's the difference, she said, if you only have 10 years to go. So, well, they finally talked me in, and they talked him in, too. And see, they had no children, And then when we got married, then we got seven on our own. And then he always said, I didn't know when we adopted those three. I thought we had the world. But now he said, I got the world with those kids. You know, he enjoyed them, and they, you know, he was farming, and he was well to do. You know, we had no problem. You know, but I said too, I would never go back, and I said to you too now, I didn't have a nickel in my pocket, but I had a roof over my head, and some, you know, I said. Some of them say, yeah, you should get married to a younger guy. I laugh and stuff. And I said, no. I said, we cherish each other, love each other, obey each other. And that's all what I need. And that's what he needed too, you know. So, and from that time on, it went up. We raised the kids. They went to school. They went to college. And so I suppose you want to know from Russia how we went? Okay.
Yeah.
When we grew up, you know, like you say, we go out, like to dances with the young people, you know. But it was like that, too. We always were groups, you know. One thought you better than the other one and stuff like that. So, but we got along, you know. Every, you know, Sunday was Sunday. But when communist was, there was no Sunday, and there was no Christmas, and there was no Easter. There was only Oktoberfest. And 1st of May, that would be the Labor Day for the labor. And then they marched, you know, and stuff like that. But otherwise, you know, there was no. And that was abortion that time already in Russia. And, like, you know, you see, it's so hard to, you have no contact from the outside world. We didn't know what's going on. In Germany or in Russia or across the street, and you not even could talk to your neighbor because the walls had ears. Because when you had the holy picture in the house and one of those comes multi camera, what they say, you better take that down. So that was terrible, you know. You always think, you know, we have it hard. And I said, every country or every community has something. Not everything is perfect, but that was worse.
Did you know what were happening? You said that they were coming and they were taking people away from the villages. Did you know what happened to those people?
No. All to Siberia. They took them all to Siberia. They had to build roads and they had to build different stuff, you know. And they starved. They only last a year or two and they were. You never could not even ask.
So there was no letters coming?
No. There was no nothing, you know. And it's just like, you know, there was no doctor. There was maybe a hospital in 20 miles away. They didn't have the medication or what. All the babies were born at home. We had those old midwives and, you know, who took care of it. There's a lot of them. The lifespan of was maybe 55, 60. That's about it. There are a lot of people, you know, died. And like with the food, too, we eat good and everything when we had. But we drank our own wine. We had made no coffee or anything, stuff like that, because we didn't have the money to buy. But, like, we had the crepes, so we made our own wine and our vegetables, you know. Pickled all the stuff, you know, and so.
Did you ever get to visit Odessa when you were young?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, lots of times, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you could go with a train. It took about an hour. This was 65 kilometers from us, you know, and we visit Odessa, yeah, the Black Sea.
Do you have any memories of that, Odessa?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I know we went down to the Black Sea. When you look at the Black Sea, it's dark, you know. But when you go look down, it's light, you know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then see, when the Germans took it over that time, they ruined it really bad too, you know. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When you were younger, did you used to go swimming in the Limon, right?
No, in the Dnieper. And I almost drowned that time, yeah. That's why I never go. We went all, every Saturday we went down in the Dnieper, you know, went, and then they had this whirlpool, you know. And then we went in and we pulled around, pretty soon I went down and came up and went down. And the only thing I thought, now I don't see my mom anymore. And then guys were sitting up in the bridge, and one dived in and pulled me by the hair and pulled me out. And then I said, don't tell my mom, or else I can't go swimming anymore. From that time, I never went swimming. But then we could fish down there, and that's where we cut the, what you call roa, you know, for the, what they put the roofs on the house in that paper, you know. Yeah, that was a big one, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, what would have been the country just on the other side of the water?
Russian, Bessarabia was over the river here, yeah. And after then come Ottoman, and then come Romania, and then come Budapest, Hungary, you know, yeah. But nobody let us in. Nobody not even let us give water or anything. And like you say, we felt so bad for the horses and stuff. It was just impossible, you know, yeah.
When you were growing up in Strasbourg, were your family farmers or shopkeepers?
No, my dad was a handwerker, a craftsman. They made wagon wheels, and they made wagon, they made coffin, they put wooden floor in the roofs and stuff. Like there were so many in who had this. They brought it back from Germany. They were all craftsmen, you know. They could do anything. Schumacher, you know, made shoes. That time you couldn't buy your shoes. You had to go to the shoemaker, and he measured it on, and he made it your shoe. And to the Schneider, get your coat, measured you for your coat and your dresses and stuff, yeah. There was, I cannot really see, but there was a lot of craftsmen in there, you know.
Was he a carpenter then?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What's the German word for carpenter?
Schreiner, yeah. And see, his dad already was, you know, when they came in from Elsass-Lothringen, you know, they were so overcrowded, they didn't know, they had no work, and so they volunteered to go in, you know, to Russia, and that's what they built it up. And I know my pa said, his dad said, when they came in, you know, when they went out in the field, they had to turn around right away on the way, so they found the way home again. So much it was overgrown, you know, with wilderness and stuff like that, you know.
So it would have been your grandfather that came from Germany?
My great-grandfather, yeah. Mm-hmm. But I said to, if it wouldn't be for the Germans, Russia wouldn't made it. And it's like here in America, too. If it wouldn't be for the German Russians, America would not. The Indian wouldn't build it up, and that's the way it was in there, you know. They built right away, they built a church, and they built a schoolhouse, and they made roads and stuff like that, you know. They just kept on going. And pretty soon, like Strasbourg, Mannheim, Kandel, got too big, and the one who came later on had to build out, more out, and those footer, you know. And so I don't know, But I said I would never go back to Germany, but I would like, you know, go back to Russia one more time. But I think that's impossible, you know. It's.
So you haven't been able to go back since?
To Russia, no. I was in Germany three times. See, my mother lived in Germany with her two sisters, so I went back three times, visited them, and then my mother died now. And my sister still living there. They got married to German boys and left their homes and stuff over there, yeah. And we had my mom coming over a year to Germany, to Russia, oh God. And she could not believe we have such wide roads, you know, in Germany. Everything is trees and everything is built up, you know. And she said, yeah, you could see some stuff in here. You could see some stuff. And we had all those. And she could not believe one of my boys, Paul, he's such a little loudmouth. He always crawled up the tree. And she said, Paul, you're going to tear your pants. What's What's bothering you? Well, I have to patch him. We don't buy patching pants, he said. We're going to buy a new one. America threw the pants away. And then she laughed, and he said, well, if you didn't like it here, go home. Yeah, it was funny. She liked it here, too, you know. But then she always said, Joe said, well, stay another year. No, she said in German, all the bomb come on it for Pflanze. All three, you cannot transplant it, she said.
How big a family did you have when you were growing up?
Well, just one brother and three, my sister and me, yeah. But he got, see, when the Russian started the war in 1941, 1942, they took all those young men from 17 on already, so my brother had to go.
And your husband had to go too?
Then that happened later on. And then later on, when the Germans came in, they took the other one. When there was no, there was, older men and little boys, I think. And my brother didn't made it home, and my husband didn't made it home. None of them. Got no contact with them, nothing. That's like here what they say, somebody dies over there from the soldiers, they coming home. There was nothing like that. There was nothing like that.
So you never found out what happened?
We know where it happened in Budapest. You know, that's where the Germans had to give up, you know. But the Russians surrounded them, so they had nothing in and nothing out. So that was the end.
So did your husband fight for the Germans or for the Russians?
For the Germans. But my brother fight for the Russian. But then he sneaked away and sneaked over to the Germans. But then he got killed too. Yeah.
When you were saying that the Germans had taken over the Odessa area, that they were withdrawing.
Yeah.
When they were there, did they consider you Germans or Russians?
They called us Germans, yeah. They called us Germans now. But just when we came to Germany, the Germans called us German-Russian. See, and they said we're not a citizen. See, we didn't belong to nobody. See, the Russian, we left for Russia, for Germany, and Germany didn't make up our mind if they want us or not. See, so we were no citizen. We, what they called us, displaced people or something like that.
Yeah, when you ended up in Germany, you said you worked for that farmer. Where was that farm?
In Schwäbisch Gmünd, by Schwäbisch Heilbronn. Yeah. But, you know, they only had 165 acres, and that's called a big farm. But they do a lot, you know. They had sheep and they had that and stuff like that, you know. Yeah.
Now, when you got over to here in America, were you surprised at all the names that you could recognize?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. It was, I don't know. First you feel, I even got lost in that little town. I went to church one morning and went all the way, and I said, well, where do I live now? Finally, one lady said, yeah, you live over there. So that's, you know, it's just, yeah, it's. But, you know, when I came over here and I heard them talk German, they made everything up. They added on to their words, you know, stuff like that. But when I was in Germany, like in Schwäbisch, well, they talked like I do now, you know. But here they add some on, they took some away and stuff like that, you know.
When you found out you were coming to Hague and then you passed by Strasbourg, was that a surprise to you?
No, it was too much snow. I mean, not even could see out. And Father Niebel had to stop out and took my two suitcases and Joe and had to walk in the house. And that year, that spring, and then they had the flood there where the rice lake filled up. That, you know, yeah.
But did you know when you were coming over here that the people that lived over here had relatives that were in the village where you grew up?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, and then everybody came, you know, from Strasbourg and Linden. They wanted to know, did you know so-and-so? Did you know Michael Schmidt? Did you know the Sangers? Did you know the Fishers? You know, yeah, I knew a lot, you know. And even now when I sit alone sometimes and I go down from one side to the then I know where the Wolves live and the Fishers and the Thomases. I knew all them But then it's all, we got all apart and never got nothing to find out anymore. So
did you know what happened to any of the other people that left Strasbourg in Russia?
Right. I knew what happened to them. See, when England and French and Russia and Germany and America came together,
I have to switch tapes, so I'm going to stop the tape now, put it in a new one, and then you can tell me about it.